This is common ground. In 1746, on the Scottish field of Culloden, Scottish rebels were massacred in their attempt to overthrow the King of England and destroy the 50-year-old union between Scotland and England. Today, in a more peaceful manner, the Scottish National Party is making its own attempt at Scottish self-rule.
Our aim is full independence within the European Union. We have all the trappings of statehood. The only thing we don't have is our own parliament. And that's because almost 300 years ago, the Scottish Parliament dissolved itself to go into union with the English Parliament so that both were dissolved and a new United Kingdom was created. Now, our argument is that that arrangement was an arrangement for the 18th century that has no relevance within the Europe in which we live. The Europe is a Europe of nation states. As an ancient nation state, Scotland would benefit very greatly from being an independent member.
Common Ground is a program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It's produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Mary Gray Davidson. Ask almost any Scot to identify him or herself, and you'll almost always hear, "I'm Scottish first," sometimes "British second," British being an umbrella term for those living within the Great Britain of England, Scotland, and Wales. Or, like this young woman, you'll find more and more Scots who call themselves European.
Scottish first, then European second. I don't really believe in sort of British in the middle, because eventually we're going to be one Europe anyway. So what's the point of splitting it down even further?
There's no question in the mind of this cab driver about who he is.
How do you identify yourself as Scottish or part of British or European? What is your...
Scottish.
Scottish first.
Scottish first.
And always.
And always.
What is your preference for Scotland's political future? Do you prefer independence, the current union with Britain, or...?
I would like to see independence now.
And what would Scotland gain from independence?
A fairer deal than what we're getting. If you look at the history of Scotland, no shipbuilding, no steel, whiskies abroad, no investment. You know what I mean? Scotland did produce the finest ships in the world, the finest steel, coal, and we haven't. It's gone. Shipping. You know, it really is. It's modern time Highland clearances that happened in the 1800s. But it's happening again in modern time. So.
National identity is almost sure to strike a nerve in Scotland, as it does in many parts of the world at the end of the 20th century. For 300 years now, Scotland has had a union with England as part of Great Britain, though it's had its own distinct legal and education system. Scots who felt more dominated than allied with the English have been more vocal in recent years about their discontent with the arrangement. Some favor what's called devolution, a process that would give Scotland more autonomy, but would not sever the union completely. Michael Russell, chief executive of the Scottish National Party, says Scotland's future lies in complete independence.
We don't favor devolution. We've always said we won't stand in the way of anything that might improve things slightly, but devolution is not our aim. Our aim is full independence within the European Union.
And that would mean your own defence?
Yes. The things that make countries normal. Scotland's in a rather odd position. A Scottish academic called Chris Harvey described Scotland once as the invisible nation. We have all the trappings of statehood. We have our own education service. We have our own legal system. We have our own religious establishment. We have our own football team. We have all those things which are normal for nation states. The only thing we don't have is our own parliament. And that's because almost 300 years ago, the Scottish Parliament dissolved itself to go into union with the English Parliament so that both were dissolved and a new United Kingdom was created. Now, our argument is that that arrangement was an arrangement for the 18th century that has no relevance within the Europe in which we live. The Europe is a Europe of nation states. As an ancient nation state, Scotland would benefit very greatly from being an independent member, particularly Scotland, which has within its bounds 70% of Europe's energy reserves.
It's interesting because we live in an era when some people talk about the disintegration of the nation state and integration, and yet we see so many nationalist movements that are forging ahead right now. What do you think is at the core there?
Well, I think that the SNP and the people in Scotland are in actual fact internationalist in outlook. But in order to be internationalist, we have to disengage from our present situation. We're in what is presently called an incorporating union. There is neither Scotland nor England, but a country called the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. That is the state. In order for us to participate as a state fully within Europe and within the United Nations, we have to disengage from that relationship and re-engage as an independent state within Europe and the world. So I think that we are a forward-looking country and a forward-looking party. We just have to take that one step backwards in order to go forward.
In a way, though, wouldn't remaining part of the United Kingdom give Scotland more leverage in organizations like the United Nations or the European Union?
No, none at all in the United Nations, because the name Scotland is never mentioned in the United Nations, of course. In the European Union, there has been an argument, particularly by the Tories, or to some extent by Labour, that Scotland benefits from being represented as part of a larger state. There are two problems with that. One is it's not true. Small states in Europe do extremely well. In fact, some commentators in Europe talk about the tyranny of the tiny states. Small states in Europe have an influence out of all proportion to their size. The second one is that Scotland isn't very well represented. At meetings of the Council of Ministers, a Scottish minister, that is a minister from the Scottish office, has, I think, been present on something like five occasions over the last 5 years, when there have been hundreds, possibly thousands of meetings. So Scotland doesn't get good representation in Europe, and it could get much better representation with its own ministers at the Council of Ministers.
At the heart of the issue of Scottish independence, is it a matter of greater economic power? Is it an issue of national identity? Is it
There are many issues tied up together. There used to be a discussion as to whether this was a cultural or an economic movement. I think it's very much an economic movement. It's a movement that looks at Europe and looks at the prosperity of small countries in Europe and the participation that those countries have in decision-making and the way in which they can play a wider role in the world, including through matters such as international aid, and says we're actually not very well represented and we're not very well looked after and we could in actual fact manage our own affairs a lot better. We are also, as I've said, an energy-rich country. We have 70% of Europe's energy reserves within Scotland. We would be the largest oil provider in the whole of Europe. Those resources are not applied to Scottish problems. We're not allowed to spend them ourselves. We're not allowed to decide the priorities on which they're spent. So economically, as a country, we would be better off in Europe. But also socially, we'd be better off. And we'd be a nation more confident with ourselves. And a final thought on it, we'd also be able to participate in programs such as international aid programs. Britain gives one of the lowest percentages of GDP for international aid of any developed nation. We think that's quite scandalous, but as Scots we can do nothing about it because the decisions are made in London. We want to, in actual fact, participate much more fully.
So is it for economic reasons that London would be against Scotland separating itself?
I think one's got to be very careful when it talks about London, because I think that the majority of people in England are not worried about it. I think it's been a big change over the last 20 years. I think they realise it's almost an inevitability that this is going to happen, and they want to get used to the idea. But political parties are different. The Tories are reluctant because their whole policy over the last 20 years has been fuelled by oil money. Oil money has paid for unemployment. Oil money has essentially paid for the mistakes of the Tory party. Labour is in a different position. Labour's power base lies in Scotland. It's realistic. Realistic chances of taking and holding power at Westminster really depend upon its Scottish electoral base and the number of MPs. They have 49 MPs in Scotland. Independence would remove that at a stroke and would probably mean that Labour would have a very limited chance of taking power in England. In those circumstances, there are a lot of vested interests playing against what really is normal for a small state.
What I was wondering, back to this issue of the cultural movement issue. How important is identity?
Well, identity is very important, but I don't think it should be defined narrowly by anybody. If you're Scottish, you're the product of all sorts of things. I mean, my mother is English. I was actually born in England, but brought up in Scotland. We have an awful lot of people in the party who were born outside Scotland, from other places. There's a sense of cultural identity, because clearly we're a different country, and we have different background, we have different writers, different poets, different musicians, different artists, a different history. That's not an exclusive thing. I mean, I'd welcome anybody to take part in those things, to learn about them, to enjoy them. system. We have the Gaelic language, which is something I'm personally keen on, which is a language spoken by about 1% of the Scottish population, but a very ancient language. But the identity of Scotland is bound up both in what is in the past and what culturally is in the present, and also how we see ourselves. One of the great difficulties of seeing yourself in Scotland through the media and elsewhere is you're constantly seeing yourself through somebody else's filter, through the filter of the United Kingdom, through the filter of the Westminster Parliament, through broadcasting structures that are very largely based south of the border. So there's quite a difficulty in defining your Scottish identity, and particularly now defining it in relation to Europe and to the wider world, because there's always a barrier between us and those things. And I think one of the important things about independence, apart from economic benefits, is a way in which we can have the confidence to then do what we want to do in our own country and look at the wider world free of that barrier.
I was going to ask you how you identify yourself. Do you call yourself Scottish? Are you a European?
Well, interestingly enough, there was an opinion poll in Scotland earlier this year that asked people that very question. Now, in Scotland, about 78% of people call themselves Scottish first, British second, European third. There was a substantial majority that saw themselves as Scottish first, European second, and British nowhere. I would have to count myself amongst that number, not because of any antagonism I have towards description British, but simply because I do think of myself, first of all, as Scottish, and then very much as part of Europe.
You had sort of answered this in one of your previous responses in how you pick out the British influence of the past 300 years from your identity, but what you're saying is you can't.
No, I mean,
you
we're
can't
all,
separate
no,
all,
we're all,
all these know, influences.
It's fairly seamless garment, all of us. We're all tied together with lots of influences, and it'd be quite unhealthy for us to reject those, you know, to reject the past, good or bad. What we've got to do is learn from it and discover what the strengths are and how we go on from here. And I think the important thing that the SNP is talking about is the way in which we can have a modern Scottish identity that's not clouded by the past, perhaps enriched by the past, but not clouded by it, and not antagonistic towards anybody. We're a very, very inclusive movement, and not an exclusive movement.
Now, you talked about what obviously England would lose if Scotland became independent, and that would be oil revenue. Yeah. How do you sell the idea of nationalism? How do you sell the idea of Scottish nationalism in England? What would they gain?
Well, I think there's a number of gains to be had. I mean, first of all, it's often said that England would lose a surly lodger and get a good neighbour, and I think that sense of tension would disappear. I think that we would be neighbours on the same island. We would be able to work very well together. A large part of our export market would be in England. Huge interrelationships, family interrelationships. So, I mean, I don't think there's any problems in it. What I think has to be gained is slightly intangible but rather interesting nonetheless. England has, for several generations, been redefining itself and its purpose. I mean, Britain was, you know, a country which did lose an empire and which didn't find a role. And that role needs to be found. And I think that the ability to find that lies in having a very clear view of yourself and who you are. I think that view is still clouded by the remnants of empire. And I would say that the incorporating union between Scotland and England is one of the remnants of empire. I think shedding oneself of that, of standing on one's own two feet, being realistic about the economic prospects, the role of a comparatively small country in Europe, a country that could be wealthy and a country with a tremendous tradition, but understanding that as the destiny and an opportunity of England would help the English a great deal.
Is Scottish independence inevitable?
Well, I'm not a great believer in historic inevitability, but I think that it is a very appropriate answer for the problems that we have. I think it's up to politicians to work to make things happen rather than resting on inevitability. But
Which problems are you referring to in particular?
Well, I think the long-term economic problems of Scotland, the long-term social problems of Scotland, the problems of bad housing, bad health services, our health record is pretty appalling in actual fact. All those sort of problems can be solved by independence. It's up to politicians to work for that, and it's up to the SNP to work to make independence happen. One very interesting thing has happened in the last 20 years. In the 1970s, when the SNP was doing extremely well electorally, the actual support for independence in opinion polls was something like 10 to 15%, never above 20%. In the last few years, support for independence has run between 35 and 40%. On some occasions, it's been the majority support in Scotland. So support for independence now outstrips support for the SNP. I think over the last 20 years, the fear of independence that many Scots have had has disappeared. They're now, one might say, in a state of benevolent neutrality. What they have to do is persuaded to embrace it as a major opportunity.
Is it because they're feeling the effects of the problems internally, or there is this trend worldwide? I mean, with the breakup of the communist world, we see so many nations gaining their own independence.
No country is immune from international trends, but I think there's a fairly clear reason in Scotland why there's been such a big change. We've gone through 16 years of Tory government at Westminster. Government never elected by the Scottish people. Scottish people did not elect Thatcher in 79 and did not return a majority of Tory MPs in either 83, 87 or 92. So we've had four general elections in which the will of Scotland has been neglected. We've also had a very, very clear majority in Scotland for constitutional change. Now, that majority has been for some form of change. Some people want independence, some people want devolution. But there has been a view that we should have some form of Scottish Parliament. That has not only been rejected by the government, it has been ridiculed by the government. And I think there's a very strong feeling that the Tories particularly are a party that knows nothing about Scotland and cares even less.
You're listening to Common Ground, a program on world affairs by the Stanley Foundation. So far, we've been talking with Michael Russell, chief executive of the Scottish National Party, which supports independence from England. Printed transcripts and audio cassettes of this program are available from Journal Graphics. Please listen at the end of the broadcast for details on how to order. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts a wide range of programs meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. My other guest today is Frank Judd, spokesperson for the Labour Party in the British House of Lords. The Labour Party itself favors devolution, but Lord Judd is sympathetic to the growing call for independence in Scotland.
People keep remembering that at the beginning of the 18th century, in the early 1700s, it was a union of two independent nations. It wasn't a takeover by England, although England's very often behaved since as though it were. And therefore, the issue, in my judgment, the issue is not whether there will be devolution in the United Kingdom, but when and how it will come. And the real difference that exists at the moment is that on the one hand, the largest political party in Scotland, the Labour Party, favours an independent, self-governing parliament for Scotland within the United Kingdom. The second largest party in Scotland, the Nationalists, favour totally independent Scotland within the European Union, of course, but so that, I mean, there would still be relationships, but totally interdependent in that context. I'm certain that change has got to come sooner or later. If, by any chance, in the United Kingdom as a whole, in the next general election, the Conservatives were again to win, which at the moment, by all the public opinion polls, does not look likely. But if they were to win, I think this would lead to an immense strengthening of the nationalist cause for total independence in Scotland, because the Scots are just not prepared to put up with this English political choice for any longer. Labour wins, the Labour Party wins in the United Kingdom as a whole, which at the moment looks a quite possible outcome, then I think you will find that the Labour Party is deeply committed to this self-governing parliament within the United Kingdom. Of course, it remains to be seen what will happen next century if there is a self-governing parliament within the United Kingdom with powers for everything virtually except defence, foreign affairs and finance, whether that will remain the situation or whether there will again be a tendency for that to lead to total independence, except that I make two strong provisos. One is that in the world in which we live, there is no, in reality, total independence because we are all interdependent. It would be a form of political organisation, but we would still have to tackle the environment. We would still have to tackle economic affairs. We would still have to tackle migration. We would still have to tackle terrorism and all the rest together.
Is the demand for devolution, does that fit into the idea that you stated early on that we're seeing this retreat into village parochialism? Do you connect those two?
That is a very good point. And, of course, there are people who worry that if you break the political organisations down into smaller units, the kind of politicians who will dominate are the politicians who simply look at the immediate local issues with no sense of vision of history, of the wider challenges and the rest. There is that anxiety. However, I have to say that one of the interesting things about Scotland is that there is a very strong tradition in Scotland of international involvement. And both the Labour Party, which is the largest party in Scotland, and the Scottish Nationalists are, for example, deeply committed to the European Union, so that doesn't seem to be so likely in Scotland. The other point, of course, to put it in personal terms, is that the leader of the Labour Party in Scotland, the key politician, George Robertson, is a great internationalist and also is a devoted supporter of the principle of the European Union.
Lord Judd, how do you identify yourself?
How do I
identify yourself?
Well, I've been trying to disguise it while you're talking. I am the half Scot, and I feel I am very close to my Scottish family, and because I'm very close to my Scottish family, I understand the feelings that are there, and I worry that there are those still around in England who say they don't want any of this to happen and they want somehow to hold the United Kingdom together and want to insist upon this. I think that is a very short-sighted, foolish approach, because I think that could lead to quite a dangerous situation as the pressure builds up. I think the challenge is to enable the Scots to feel their identity and to feel a command of their own affairs and to do it constructively within the context of good cooperation with the English and the rest of the other members of the European Union and the international community as a whole. I think that will be strong. I think the other will be weak, because we'll be holding a situation against growing frustration. May I just make one other interesting observation? There's been a certain amount of in-depth social analysis of English attitudes, and I mean English mm-hmm. attitudes. What is interesting is that it appears that the majority of people in England are very relaxed about Scotland having a greater degree of autonomy, because I've been emphasising this culture of community in Scotland. Well, that may not be quite so strong in much of the... Well, may not be strong at all in parts of England, to be honest. But there is something which is, I think, very special to the English culture, which I'm very proud as somebody who's half English, and that is the great sense of fair play and justice. And I think a lot of English people feel that the Scots deserve to be able to have their self-expression, and they see the frustrations in the present system, and that's, I think, is political maturity. And they recognise that it would be better to approach it constructively and positively than negatively, perhaps with disastrous consequences.
What would England lose if Scotland gained more autonomy?
Well, I think one of the things we'll lose is a lot of tremendously effective thinkers and leaders in our politics, because I think much of the most imaginative thinking about Britain and its place in the world and its future has come from Scots. And I will be sorry. I mean, the English will have to work hard to live up to that tradition. I think, obviously, we will lose the richness of the Scottish presence in our political system, and that will be a loss. The other, of course, issues that will arise, although with the plans of the Labour Party for a self-governing Scotland with its own parliament within the United Kingdom, one of the issues reserved for the United Kingdom as a whole is finance and economic affairs. But I think there will be a more acute argument about where, for example, the proceeds from the rich mineral resources of the North Sea should go, whether they should mm-hmm. go to Scotland or to England.
So there is an economic aspect to this.
Oh, of course there is. Of course there is. And that will inevitably become more acute.
Do you see the UK at a crossroads here?
I don't think it's so much... Yeah, well, in a sense, it's... Yeah, yes. In a sense, the United Kingdom is at a crossroads. But when you talk about a crossroads, you normally think of roads crossing, each of which goes somewhere. My view is there's only one road that goes anywhere, and that is how we tackle the issue of devolution, whether it's done constructively or whether it happens untidily and messily and disruptively, because in the end the situation cannot be held together any longer. The other road, to try and hold things together, as they have traditionally been, is a cul-de-sac. It's a no-through road.
It's not often that we in the U.S. ever hear about Scotland, and Michael Russell, chief of the Scottish National Party, is happy that two big Hollywood releases this year deal with some of Scotland's more famous, or depending on who you are, infamous characters.
Is there some historical ties you could make to...
Well, I don't think any of us are Rob Roys or William Wallace's or anything. I greatly enjoyed the film Rob Roy. I was at the premiere here in Edinburgh, and I know the producer, whom I've known for many years. I think that films such as Rob Roy remind us that there is a thirst for independence in Scotland. The way in which we express that thirst is very different at the start of the 21st century than it was perhaps 300, 400, 500 years ago. But nonetheless, there is a sense of identity and independence, which I think can be built on. And if people outside Scotland understand that about Scotland, it helps them to relate to a party which perhaps they've not heard very much about.
For Common Ground, I'm Mary Gray Davidson. For a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9539, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. And again, ask for program number 9539. To order by credit card, you can call toll-free 1-800-825-5746. And if you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation, or you have some comments about the program, please write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. And again, the toll-free number for credit card orders is 1-800-825-5746. Theme music was created by B.J. Lederman. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.